Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Ukrainian officials and their Western backers endlessly tell us that Ukraine is experiencing extreme shortages of just about everything. However, there is no shortage of shameless propaganda generated for Western public consumption. And it should be no surprise, Ukraine is as corrupt as ever. Cross-talking propaganda, I'm joined by my guest, Wyatt Reed in Washington. He's a journalist with Sputnik News. In Ohio, we have Oliver Boyd Barrett. He is a professor emeritus of journalism and public relations at Bowling Green State University, as well as author of Russiagate and Propaganda. And in Quebec, we cross to Dimitri Laskaris. He is a lawyer and freelance journalist. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Oliver, you're the expert in propaganda on this program, so I'm going to go to you first. And plus, you come from one of the most beautiful cities in America. Oliver, I sent out to you an article that Politico published by the foreign minister of Ukraine. Now, he has every right to his opinion. I have no problem with that. It did say opinion here. But it's really quite bothersome that an outlet like Politico would give such prominence to an op-ed that is demonstrably false on so many different levels here. You know, when another foreign leader writes something like that for Politico, there's pushback, there's analysis, there's a counter-argument. Not in this case here. It is taken as the gospel. And the reason why I wanted to focus in on it is that this is such a disservice to the public that the war aims of this, of America's war aims, NATO's war aims here, are so opaque, and it's just flooded, drowning in propaganda. Oliver, your thoughts.
Well, my main thought about propaganda at this juncture of the conflict is that there, since Solidar, since the fall of Solidar, which I believe Ukraine has now acknowledged, there has been a growing symmetry, as it were, between the Western media and Russia with respect to what is actually going on in the ground. Because for a long while, after the fall of to Russia of Severodonetsk and Lizzie Chance, for quite a long while, Western media were totally focused on Kharkiv and on the Kherson Ukrainian counteroffensives, and glorifying these as though these represented a major setback to Russia's interests in this conflict and the purposes of the SMO. But all of a sudden, it seems to me, we've got an interesting convergence as to what the basic facts on the ground are, on the battlefields, I mean to say, even though, of course, the Western mainstream media have a totally different interpretation of what those facts signify. However, it's for sure there's a far deeper sense of gloom right now in Western mainstream media about Ukraine. But instead of moving from a position of gloom to concluding that this is a fight that would better now be negotiated, they are simply escalating purposely, mindlessly, without a sense, a clear sense of direction, without a clear sense of plan. All they can think of is weapons and weapons and more weapons, even though they're actually running out of many of those weapons.
You're absolutely right, Dimitri. Let me go to you in Quebec here. I've been following the whole tank story here, and I don't take it very seriously. Never once that I can see in Western media have they ever mentioned the number of tanks that Russia has, okay? And if you compare the number of tanks with what the 12 they want to send or 31 or whatever it is here, I mean, obviously, and it goes in line with what Oliver is saying here, that this is just to score some kind of temporary propaganda victories here. But these tanks that they're talking about, whenever they're going to show up, nobody knows. It hardly is going to make any impact. I think the foreign ministry said here is that these tanks will melt like the rest of them. Go ahead, Dimitri.
Well, absolutely. The tanks, first of all, you're getting new technology delivered to the battlefield, so there's going to have to be extensive training done. It's very difficult to, fight as a unified fighting force when you're basically you know, operating with a Frankenstein of an army, different types of weaponry, employing different types of technology, requiring different types of training. So quite apart from the small number of the tanks relative to Russia's military assets, this is going to be a real challenge logistically. And how are they going to be serviced? Are they going to be sent back to Poland? Are they going to be sent to Slovakia, removed from the battlefield? And they're going to require high levels of servicing, as all tanks do in a battlefield environment. What I think is really interesting about the timing of this Politico propaganda piece from the foreign minister is that Euroscopia put out a poll, and there's been other polling like this done in Europe, which showed that 48% of citizens in 9 European countries, including Germany and Austria, favor a quick end to the war, even if Ukraine has to give up territories to achieve peace, while only 32% declared themselves against territorial concessions to speed up peace. I'm sure that the Ukrainian government is cognizant of the mood and the growing impatience in the West with this war. When they see numbers like that, it is undoubtedly alarming to them because without the support of the West, let's be clear, economically and militarily, it would be over in Ukraine. The country would be a failed state. And so I think this is really a sign of the desperation of the Ukrainian government, that it comes out with just a series of fictions about Minsk in order to justify its intransigence in with respect to negotiations.
Yeah, you know, Wyatt, we had the very eminent qualified individual by the name of Annalena Baerbock. She is the German foreign minister. How she got the job is a mystery to me. But she said, quote, in the last news cycle, Germany and its allies are fighting a war against Russia. I thought NATO wasn't involved in this conflict here. I thought they were non-combatants, I thought they weren't co-belligerents in this conflict. But the foreign minister of Germany let the mask drop. Go ahead, Wyatt.
Yeah, it's all out in the open now. They certainly can't pretend, as they have been for the previous year almost, that they are actually just helping out these plucky Ukrainians to pursue their goals of self-determination. Now, I think it's increasingly clear that this is, in fact, a proxy war that NATO has been waging against Russia for some time. With respect to this op-ed you were referencing earlier, I tend to agree with the previous guest that this does showcase the desperation that accompanies now the increasing unpopularity of their position on the regional and global stage. I mean, just reading through this, it's basically a series of projections of basically inverting reality on its head. Yep. I mean, you can read in individual sentences from the inception of the Minsk agreements, Moscow was preparing for a full-scale war on Ukraine. No, that's a lie. The opposite is true. We know that from admissions recently by Angela Merkel, Francois Hollande, former German chancellor, former French president, that Minsk was actually an attempt on the part of the Ukrainians to basically rearm themselves and maintain and enhance their fighting capabilities. They had no intention of actually pursuing a peaceful settlement. We see other claims in this op-ed about Russia doesn't negotiate in good faith. We know the opposite is true. You know, in April, for example, Boris Johnson was sent to convince the Ukrainian regime that I believe the actual quote from Ukrainian source was that even if Ukraine is ready to negotiate with Russia, we, the West, are not. And that was that's been the reality ever since. The Ukrainians haven't been allowed to negotiate because the United States, the United Kingdom, simply will not let them. The rest of this op-ed is the same way. It is all basically projection. It's all inverting reality. And that's all I would argue in an effort to prop up these really kind of gloomy looking poll numbers.
Well, I want to, in the second part of the program, where I talk about corruption a little bit here, but I want to go back to Oliver here. I want to go back to Annalena Baerbock's statement. Germany and its allies are fighting a war against Russia. Well, if that's the case, then doesn't Russia have the right to fight a war against NATO? I mean, if the gloves are off, the mask is dropped. I mean, they're fighting Russia as a military alliance, then Russia is obliged to return the favor. I mean, she's the one that declared war, not Russia. Go ahead.
It is extraordinary, and it is disturbing, not least the extent to which the German administration is clearly running against, and has for a long time now, been running against the interests of his own people. This applies to European leaders in general, but it applies very much to Germany. It became amazingly apparent with the destruction of the Nord Stream 1, in which, of course, Germany was a major player, a major contributor. And instead of showing any real interest at all in investigating, I think most of us have a clear sense of who was behind this, because who was behind this told us what they were going to do before the war started. But instead of showing a real interest in who was actually attacking German interests, yeah, attacking German economic interests, and who was depriving Germany of cheap of its dependence on cheap Russian oil.
Yeah, but Oliver, we have to admit the Germans are complacent in this themselves. I mean, the blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, I guess we'll never know. It's kind of like, you know, Jeffrey Epstein. It's kind of like the January 6th bomber. You know, there's no interest in these things whatsoever about finding, you know, some kind of conclusion to it. And it's really interesting is that after the explosion, you know, there was a lot of media coverage from it. Radek Sikorski of Poland was very happy about it. And then it was as if, it's almost as if it didn't happen. Nobody is looking, with the exception is that Swedish intelligence is—they're really mum. They won't tell anybody what they have found, and because they won't tell anyone what they found because Russia didn't do it, and they know that. Okay, that's what drives their silence here. All right, gentlemen, we're coming up to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on propaganda. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing propaganda. Okay, let's go back to Dmitry and go back. During the break, Dmitry said he wanted to make a comment on the comments that Annalena Baerbock made, the German foreign minister. Go ahead, Dmitry.
Thank you, Peter. Well, I mean, Ms. Baerbock, as many of us know, is a German Green. As it happens, in 2020, I ran to be the leader of the Green Party of Canada after serving in its shadow cabinet as the justice critic. I finished in second place with 45% of the vote. I've been active in Green Party politics for 15 years, and I know intimately well what its core values are. One of them is nonviolence. There was a remarkable op-ed in the German feminist magazine, an interview actually recently, it's called Emma, outside the mainstream, where a retired brigadier general by the name of Erich Wade criticized the German government's approach to the war and identified the German Green Party with disbelief as the new party of war, not just in Germany, but in Europe. Ms. Baerbock, who recently came to Montreal and was hosted by Canada's foreign minister, I went to see this event and interrupted her in the middle of her speech to point out that she has fundamentally violated the core values of the Green Party by pursuing the path of violence and war to an even greater degree than anybody in mainstream German politics. So I think it's actually a disgrace. I think that we really should question those of us in the global green movement. What is Ms. Baerbock's true agenda? Whose interests is she actually serving? Has she any devotion whatsoever to the core values of the Green Party? And I think that the answer to that is a resounding no.
Well, and Dmitry, also, she's the same person that said she didn't care what her her voters thought of her policies vis-a-vis Ukraine. She just completely dismissed it. Not only, I mean, I think Oliver and I are in the kind of the age group that remember the Greens in the 1980s, don't want to betray any ages here. But, I mean, that is a transformation that is this, you know, we got to do a separate program on that because that's just so extraordinary, that change here. I kind of like the Greens in the 80s, to be honest with you, and I'm a pretty conservative guy. Wyatt, I want to change the subject a little bit here. When the big tank discussion was going on, raging, there is a major blow up in Kiev when it comes to corruption, which, of course, before February 24th of last year, Ukraine was the most corrupt country in Europe. And then for 10 months, it kind of disappeared, and now it's coming back here. And, you know, as Zelensky shamelessly at Davos, you know, we're open to Western big business. Come in, exploit us. Come on. I mean, it's really, you know, this is he's prostituting his own country, okay? And then you have all these reports about corruption, and one has to wonder, you know, it starts at the top and goes all the way down. And those of us that know Ukraine, I've been there many, many times. Very few people on mainstream TV talk about Ukraine endlessly, don't know the first thing about it, okay? And one thing I can tell you, I live in Russia. Corruption's a problem here. Russians blush at the corruption in Ukraine. Go ahead.
That's right. The scandal that you're referencing really cuts to the core of the corruption and how endemic this is now in Ukrainian society. I mean, when we remember what preceded this event, it was in the immediate days prior to the defense ministry getting basically embroiled in this huge corruption scandal. We saw top Zelensky advisor Alexei Arestovych forced out of his position. And then the next day, we saw the entire leadership of the Interior Ministry die in an extremely suspicious helicopter crash. We saw speculation from some Russian-leaning sources that they were basically trying to wet their whistle, so to speak, on some kind of corruption that the Defense Ministry had going on. And then they met with an untimely end as a result. Obviously, this is speculation. I can't prove any of it. But the timing of all of this was extremely suspicious. And anybody who spent any time in Eastern Europe will know that there is quite likely a little bit more to the story than is immediately obvious.
Yeah, Oliver, this whole corruption issue is very, very sensitive for the powers that be in the West, because we all know the problems that Western countries are facing, inflation, open borders and things like this. There's crime and a lot of other things that are happening. And as usual, the middle class is being crushed. The endless crushing of the middle class, okay? And then they're pouring tens of billions of dollars into Ukraine. And remarkably, they don't have to be held accountable. There's no audit. You know, that's a Putin talking point, an audit here. Really? Really? Is that a talking point here? Oliver, that's what makes this propaganda war so pernicious, is that you can't even ask a simple question, okay? And Zelensky, I would point out, is going to be a very, very lonely man very, very quickly, because he knows the knives are out for him. The next few weeks and months are going to be critical. Okay, go ahead, Oliver.
Yes, I think he probably is in great danger. But if he gets out in time, he'll also be an extremely rich man, as I believe a lot of other people are going to be extremely rich. How could they not be, given the extraordinary flow of resources and money into Ukraine, a lot of which is going into very dubious places? So all of these weapons that are being sent, many of them, that are not burnt by Russian artillery will end up in the hands of Russia. They will end up in the hands of more worrying groups in other parts of Europe, perhaps even terrorist groups. The armaments industries will be extremely satisfied, particularly the United States and in Europe. Just quickly going back to this issue of corruption, I mean, corruption has always been a feature of post-Soviet Ukraine. It was these the pretext for the coup d'etat in 2014, the Maidan protesters, that started off as an anti-corruption demonstration that was then taken over, as we know, by the Banderites, by the extreme neo-Nazi right wing. But then all this talk about corruption, but we find in the surveys that a year or so after the coup d'etat, there's just as much, if not more, public concern about corruption in Ukraine.
Oliver, can you spell Hunter Biden? Okay, that's my point. Okay, I would wager a lot of money that corruption is far worse now than it was in 2014. Continue, please.
Then Zelensky in 2019, he comes in on two main tickets. One is anti-corruption, and of course that hasn't happened. And the other one was, of course, he's going to bring about peace. So how much trust can you put in a man who tells you that he's going to be fighting for these two things, and clearly achieves neither and doesn't do very much. But is this recent scandal to do with corruption? I don't think it's to do with corruption. I don't have the evidence, but I would wager it seems to be very strange that at this point in the conflict, Zelensky would initiate an anti-corruption campaign and be getting rid of people. In the wake of William Burns's, the chief of the CIA, who was in Kiev just a week ago, it seems to me far more likely that we have some kind of power struggle going on in Ukraine. It has been suggested that one reason for this power struggle might be U.S. pressure to move the Ukraine administration more away from the influence and the manipulation of the British, which has been considerable, as we know from Boris Johnson's history in making peace impossible in Ukraine, moving it away from UK control into US control. I'm not sure that I believe that, but I am pretty damn certain it's not about corruption on this particular instance.
Well, it's a very good point here. I mean, again, you know, the Ukraine's foreign policy and the security policy is made in Washington primarily. That, though, with London involved and Warsaw, let's not lose sight of that. Dmitry, we're rapidly running out of time here. Going back to the whole tank issue here, for me, it's not about the number of tanks. I think it's superfluous here, but it is an indication that the U.S. wants to escalate, because that's what it means, escalation. Okay, and if you can send tanks, then you can send planes, and you can send, like, you know what I mean, mission creep here. And as the Russians are preparing for their offensive, I think that's widely known. They're trying to make some kind of propaganda victory out of getting more involved, because what they're sending right now, if it hasn't helped them that much to this point, I certainly can't see how it's going to help them in the moving forward. Go ahead, Dmitry.
Well, I mean, they've seamlessly transitioned from talking about main battle tanks to F-16s.
Yeah.
This is now a matter of 24 hours from, you know, the capitulation of Germany to the incessant demands of the neocons for more weapons to Ukraine. Now they're talking about, you know, aircraft that are going to escalate the battle in the airspace. And I think that probably they're going to end up getting F-16s. We are on a ladder of escalation, which will potentially end ultimately in nuclear war. And this is, to me, is the thing that's most shocking about the German Green Party, is that this is a party that was founded on the principle of opposition to nuclear armaments.
Yep.
And to NATO. And it has become the tip of the spear.
Yep.
In Western propaganda towards escalation. So it's an extraordinarily dangerous situation, which at the end of the day, I mean, you can see even it's gotten so bad in Bakhmut that even U.S. government officials are coming out and telling the American press that they're urging the Ukrainians to withdraw from a portion of the battlefield where they have suffered probably tens of thousands of casualties in a doomed effort. So the realities are heading in two opposite directions. One is escalation, and the other is the defeat of Ukraine. And at some point, these two realities are going to converge. Yeah. And clash, and it's going to be an absolutely politically devastating moment for those people in the West who have been cheerleading this war from day one.
Okay, Wyatt, we have 1 minute left before we end the program here. I have to wonder what the Pentagon is thinking. Their F-16s and their Abrams tanks, they've never fought a peer power. They've always been fighting sheep herders and camel herders in the Middle East. I have to wonder what the Pentagon's really thinking, because destroying those tanks will be really easy because Russia has control of the airspace. 40 seconds to you, my friend, go ahead.
Well, this entire endeavor from the part of the West has always been, at least in part, an effort to recycle their old military hardware, to get a chance to see how it can match up against Russian equipment on an actual battlefield, and obviously to launder out the tax base of the American citizen back through these weapons manufacturers and into the hands of this transnational elite. I think they are very pleased in some regards with how things have gone. Obviously, you know, I think we're playing an extremely dangerous game here.
Yeah, well, they're playing footloose with Armageddon here. And again, I think, you know, Oliver and I would probably know better than our other two guests here. We remember those days, right? I remember talking about that incessantly. And here we are again, repeating history that we shouldn't have in the first place here. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Quebec, and Oha. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.